come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go. Got to go on the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30. Logan intercepted. Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. John Schmalk, Paul Dottino with you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to join us that way. We do have a guest coming on today in about 5 minutes from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Seth Emerson. He covers Georgia. So I know we touched on Leonard Ford a little bit yesterday with Dane Brugler. We'll have Seth Emerson today giving us more of an in-depth look at the type of player and the type of guy that he is. Obviously, he's been a player that's been mocked to the Giants a lot. Of course, you're joining us on Twitter as well for the first 5 minutes of the show. Then you can join us for the show in its full entirety over on Giants.com. And, Paul, I want to start with this. Mike Mayock has released his most updated position rankings in the draft. So I want to go through a couple here, which I thought were somewhat interesting, but nothing that really blew me away. They haven't really changed much. This is rankings 3.0 now that all the pro days are over. I'm going to ignore cornerback. At running back, he is the top two you would think with Ezekiel Elliott and Derrick Henry.
Sure.
Then he's got Devontae Booker, Kenneth Dixon, and then Kenyon Drake, who I think is a really big sleeper in this draft as a third down back. Wide receiver I think is interesting because the Giants could be in the mix for some of these guys on maybe day two and round two or round three. He has Treadwell still as his number one.
Right.
And at least to me, the guy that's kind of emerged as a good all-around receiver, that number two, is Josh Doctson out of TCU.
Right.
Who can do a little bit of everything. He is Corey Coleman, the very raw but very physically gifted wide receiver out of Baylor.
Yeah.
Then he is the speedster, Will Fuller, out of Notre Dame at four, who I know a lot of people seem to think might go in the first round now since there's so little speed in this year's draft in the wide receiver class. Then he has Sterling Shepard, who's more of a slot guy out of Oklahoma, tied for his fifth spot with Michael Thomas from Ohio State, another guy I think might be a good fit for the Giants on day two if he's still on the board.
See, I'm a Fuller guy out of that group, John. I do think that his, you know, and again, we talk all the time about how, you know, you don't want to put too much stock in the combine stuff.
He has some dropsies, though.
He did have some dropsies. Here's the thing. I'm really enamored with his ability to get free.
Right, he creates separation.
It's not just the 4.28 40 that he ran at the combine.
No, it shows up on tape that he creates separation, absolutely.
He plays fast.
Yes, no question. No argument.
And when I see that, and I think about, and this is where the Beckham factor comes into play for me. Odell Beckham had really good numbers coming out of school, but what really makes him so special in the NFL is that he plays extremely fast and smooth.
Right. Sudden change of direction, start and stop, you know, all that stuff.
He's not going to win a track meet in the world's fastest man. It's not going to happen.
He'll place pretty high, though.
He'll place high, but he's not going to win.
No, he's not.
He's not going to win. He just plays incredibly fast and incredibly smooth. And when you put those two things together, you have a dynamic, big play guy who changes the way a defense has to look at you.
And that's why I think he might end up sneaking into the first round, because there aren't many wide receivers in this class that can do that.
It's a terrible receivers class.
Well,
when
here's
you
the
consider
thing.
Big
I think,
plays.
I think the top part of the draft with those big play dynamic guys is very strong, but I think you have a lot of guys in that second and third round that could be solid possession, 60
absolutely
catch possession guys. And you know what?
I agree.
The Giants might want a guy like that opposite Beckham, given his big play ability, and they can find someone like that on day two.
I agree.
Right.
And quite frankly, you might even be able to find one at the beginning of day three.
Yes, you could in round four, absolutely.
That could be the second option on your team. He can produce. He's got good speed. He's got good hands. He's got toughness. He's got height. You can find those kinds of guys there. But when you talk about the game breakers, the guys who are really explosive and dangerous and can really change the way a defensive coordinator looks at your club, I think Will Fuller could do that. I really do. And I know about the dropsies. I know about the slight frame where people are saying, well, you know, is he going to be able to hold up? Is he going to be able to take the pounding? How is he going to do against press coverage in the NFL when guys are strong and beating you up off the line of scrimmage? Right. I know those questions are there, which is why, to me, he's not a first-round pick. I don't think he is. I think he's a high second-round pick. And if the Giants look at him at 40, I would not at all be disappointed if they took him because they do need depth at wide receiver.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us on Twitter. If you want to continue watching the show, go to Giants.com and click on Big Blue Kickoff. And now back on Giants.com, John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and Paul, one other category I thought was interesting, Mike Mayock listed his top edge rushers, and the second guy on that list is a guy that our guest covers, and that is Seth Emerson from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He covers Georgia football, and the number two edge rusher on Mike Mayock's list, Seth, is Leonard Floyd out of Georgia. And he's a guy whose production doesn't really jump off the page. What was it like covering Leonard Floyd, and what type of player will an NFL team get if they decide to draft him?
Yeah, you're exactly right that his production, as far as sack numbers and even some of the other stats, don't really jump off the page. A lot more was expected. He was a guy that came in as just a stud recruit. He was here for 3 years. People were actually surprised that he came back for a third. He was eligible to leave after last year, but he did come back, and whether he improved his stock very much, it's hard to tell, but when you talk to people around the program at Georgia, coaches, even the new coaching staff that's watched film, they say that, in not only his case, but Jordan Jenkins, the other outside linebacker, that he's also an edge rusher, could be on the radar screen for the Giants and teams looking for edge rushers, then in both of their cases, their production didn't match their actual value, that other teams accounted for them a lot. So I think that's what if you're Leonard Floyd and Jordan Jenkins' agent, that's what you're telling teams and hoping that they see the same thing.
Seth, I have to ask you something, because one of the problems for me when I get into draft projections is that you have college teams who have their own agendas as to how they're using guys, because maybe they see them a certain way or they have a certain role that needs to be filled. And their job is not to be grooming a guy to play in the NFL. That's not the deal here. I know we all look at the college ranks as the minor leagues, but the truth of the matter is college coaches need to win, and they need to win now. So how much of Floyd's development would you say may have been hindered or may have been somewhat stunted by the way Georgia used him? I mean, did they know how to use him? Did they use him in a way that they needed as opposed to how he needed?
I don't think that they really stunted him very much. I think Georgia has turned out, I want to say, 40-something guys that were in the NFL this past year. And especially on defense, they're pretty consistently known for using guys in a way that kind of is a hybrid of what's best for Georgia, but also helping them in their pro careers. You know, when you talk about outside linebackers, I've covered a couple here at Georgia that were, one was a first-round pick, which was Jarvis Jones of the Steelers a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Jordan Jenkins, who I mentioned before, was a little bit like him, as in a guy that was not only an edge rusher and a pass rusher, but was a guy that they used a lot in some pass coverage and against the run and kind of the guy on the other side. A guy who would have been a first-round pick, but he slipped because of a marijuana test and some other off-field concerns. A guy named Justin Houston, who turned out to be pretty good.
He's not bad.
And I would compare Leonard Floyd to him. Houston, a little bit bigger. Floyd, maybe a little bit faster, but both big and lean. And when Justin Houston left here, he had big sack numbers, but there was a sense that was all he did, that he didn't really do much in pass coverage. He wasn't great against the run. He just went after the quarterback. Well, that's worked out well for him in the NFL.
I think so.
And Floyd, I think Floyd coming out of Georgia, while he may not have the sack numbers that Justin Houston did when he was a junior and left early, there's a sense that he did a little bit more than Houston. They're comparable prospects, I think. And the thing about it is the way they've talked about Leonard Floyd, never mind what his stats and his production were, but the way they talked about it, these coaches here, was this guy's just a freak. And this guy is an awesome, awesome talent. So they've always thought highly of him. And frankly, it's a case of they don't really care what the stats say.
Well, you know, Seth, I want to follow up on that because I think you make some really good comparisons there. And as a 3-4 outside linebacker, Justin Houston's been phenomenal, and he's been a great player. But at the same time, he's probably not big enough to be a 4-3 full-time defensive end. In the same way, I don't think anybody would make the argument that Leonard Floyd is big enough to be a full-time 4-3 defensive end. So I guess my question for you, based on what you saw Floyd do in college, and we know they moved him inside a little bit, they had him in space, they had him cover. Like you said, he did more than just rush the passer. If a 4-3 defensive team happens to draft him, and they're not having him rush the passer on third down, on first or second down, what do you think Floyd does well? Where can you put him? What situations can you use him to get the most out of his talent?
Well, you make a very good point that they actually used him at inside linebacker, and a big part of the plan before this past season, the 2015 season at Georgia, was to use him at inside linebacker. They actually listed him on the depth chart as co-inside linebacker and co-outside linebacker.
Interesting.
And part of the reasoning for that was what they had at inside linebacker and what they had at outside linebacker coming back. Well, I won't get you too much into the details with the Georgia football depth chart and roster, but they actually ended up having a couple, especially one inside linebacker, kind of come out of nowhere and be the team MVP. So that was why Floyd ended up still just being an outside linebacker as you know, the season went on last year, not because they didn't think he could play inside linebacker. And, I mean, they planned to flex him around and, you know, start him at inside linebacker, but then kind of move him around, try and find the hole in the line, the hole in the offense to blitz. But the fact they even were going to use him inside and were prepping him to do that. And by the way, they did that a little bit in 2014 too. Like when they, obviously you're not going to play any option teams in the NFL, but he was good enough against the run and good enough in other facets of the game that when they did play some option teams, he was used inside. So that's what I talk about in terms of versatility, in terms of comparing him and Justin Houston, why I compare them in a lot of ways. Floyd, maybe not as spectacular as Houston in getting to the quarterback, but offered more versatility than Houston did coming out of college.
So just to follow up on that, did they use Floyd in coverage often? How often did they ask him to like carry a tight end down the field, play zone, and move around away from the line of scrimmage?
They asked. He ended up doing that a few times, and to be honest, that's where he fell short a little bit.
Okay.
Now, some of that may be, hey, look, yeah, you don't want your 6'5", 240 pounds, whatever he was playing at it, you know,
of course,
outside linebacker playing in coverage very much. But he did get beat on a few of those times. But they tended to be against wide receivers. Match him up against a tight end, and I don't remember a pass coverage situation like that happening. But I do remember, because I catalog every game and do kind of a film review a couple days later, I do remember over the last couple of years a couple instances where I was like, ooh, they caught Floyd in pass coverage, and that didn't end well. But it tended to be against a wide receiver and probably more of a schematic problem.
Got it.
One final one for me, Seth, before we ask you about a couple of other players who may be interesting prospects from the Bulldogs. Who do you believe is most interested in them? Are you hearing a range of where Floyd could go? Because in the last couple of weeks, we are now seeing mock drafts that have the Giants, in some cases, picking him at number 10. Up until that point, I had heard he was going to be a late first rounder. Most people had said to me, maybe if he sneaks to the top 15. But now we see his name popping up with the Giants in the last 2 weeks. What are you hearing from an NFL perspective?
Well, I honestly, I'm not hearing too much with the coaching change here. It's just all about kind of spring football and, you know, we know a little bit about what's going on with the NFL stuff, but we don't get too much into it. But I do know that he's at the pro day last month. He turned a few people off, Leonard Floyd did, by not doing some things. I think he didn't run. And I think he let his 40 time do some work. He had like a stomach bug that morning, and so he couldn't do some other things. But I also know he's visited with the Falcons, or he was going to visit with the Falcons. I think he's got a lot of visits. I'm also of the mind that I'm one of those people who believes that anytime you hear that so-and-so is visiting with some team or met with some team at the combine or whatever, that means there's no chance he's going to be drafted. it's all about mining information. It's like, they're probably asking Floyd about some of his teammates or players he's gone up against, or
okay,
it's a complete smokescreen. So that's always how I believed about these kind of reports.
Now, one guy I think is real interesting is someone you already mentioned when we asked you about Floyd, and we're joined by Seth Emerson, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and that's his fellow outside linebacker, and I'm going to call him more of a pass rusher, maybe defensive end, Jordan Jenkins. Now, he's 6'3", he's 260, he's much more solidly built than Floyd. I would imagine he stands up against the run a little bit better. Do you think he could play more hand-in-the-dirt football when he gets to the next level in the NFL?
I think he could. I mean, I think he's still more suited to be an outside linebacker in a 3-4, maybe in a 4-3, but he can play some defensive end. He did that in college, put his hand in the dirt sometimes. Like you say, he's a little bit bigger. But he's, you know, Floyd was the lanky, lean, athletic, fast guy who would just run across the field and drag a guy down from behind. Jenkins was the guy that would, you know, use his strength a little bit more. And Floyd, you know, didn't have any of the character issues either. But I will say that Jordan Jenkins has character, you know, that he's one of those guys who he's a plus. If you all go inside the Giants locker room and get to interview players, you want them to draft Jordan Jenkins. He was a great quote. Leonard was a nice guy. He just didn't have too much to say. What he did have to say was usually good, but he didn't have much to say. Jordan Jenkins, fill up your notebook. Fill up all your sound bites. We loved him, and he was from all reports, you know, not just the guy that the media likes, but the guy that was a good character guy.
Well, it's nice that you're taking us into consideration here, Seth. We appreciate that very much because, after all, we do hold those microphones and we do like to get those sound bites. I want to ask you about another guy who, to me, maybe a good third-round choice for somebody because I think he's got to make it grade. That's offensive tackle John Theus. How do you see him fitting in to an NFL system?
You know, he was a guy that was always projected, even back in high school, as a guy that would be a high draft pick eventually. He also, like Jordan Jenkins and Leonard Floyd, was a little bit surprising to some people that he didn't go pro, or at least didn't think more seriously about going pro after last year. He was inconsistent, especially early in his few years. Everyone expected him to come in. He was a big five-star recruit out of Jacksonville, Florida. Everyone expected him to come in and be Georgia's left tackle for 4 years, maybe only three. He didn't get moved to left tackle until his junior year, and he had some games here and there where he wasn't as strong. But he's still a big mammoth guy who consistently was a very good blocker, a guy that Georgia's going to miss a lot. And I think third round, upper second round is fair, with the potential to, you know, and certainly the skill to be someone that ends up being in some Pro Bowls. See, in the right situation.
For me, Seth, he's got to add some power because his frame can take it, and I think he's going to need that if he's going to succeed at this level. How is the strength and conditioning in the power program down at Georgia? Because that, to me, is something that he's missing.
Yeah, I mean, he may benefit. Not to say that Georgia's wasn't good, but they've made two changes over the time that Theus was here. He came in under one program. They changed it before his senior year, and the new coach, Kirby Smart, has brought in his own person. So whatever it was not considered to be this great model strength and conditioning program that, you know, for instance, Alabama has. So that is potentially something where he offers some upside in the NFL.
All right, Seth, I want to touch on a player that I think is real interesting, has a great story. I think we might just lost Seth. Hey, Dave, we lost Seth there. Can we get him back on the line? Thanks, man. When he comes back, I'm going to ask him about Keith Marshall, I think is a real interesting prospect. We'll get him back up on in just a second. We had some cell phone funny business going on right there.
Well, you could hear the wind.
Yeah, you could, absolutely. I'm not sure where he was, but the wind was definitely kicking. And, you know, the funny thing about it is that he's kind of said about Leonard Floyd what I think a lot of the other people we've talked to have said about him, and that you're not quite sure where he's going to fit in a 4-3.
I mean, you know, John, he exhibits so many different skills, and I get that. But, again, jack of all trades, maybe not a master of any one particular one.
Now, again, in a 3-4, I think he's a great fit for a team that wants a 3-4 outside linebacker.
And you can get away with that easier in a 3-4 than you can a 4-3.
Yeah, but the 3-4 outside linebacker, he has to do a bunch of different things. You can use him in that type of versatile role. Not so much the case in the 4-3. And now we're rejoined by Seth Emerson. Seth, sorry about the cell phone issues. Let's move on to the offensive side of the ball real quick. And I know the story of Keith Marshall. You probably know it better than I do.
Right.
Can you just kind of tell the fans who Keith Marshall is, his relation to Todd Gurley, and kind of how he's gotten to where he is today?
Right. Well, when he and Todd Gurley were recruited in the same class, not necessarily a package deal, but both from North Carolina, and believe it or not, the higher-rated one was Keith Marshall. Now, we've seen this before where the lower-rated one comes in and ends up being better. There were a lot of reasons for that. Todd Gurley played in a little bit more of a hideaway area. But Keith Marshall, a lot of speed, obviously, a lot of raw ability. The question, and it looks like health is not an issue anymore. People are still wondering why he didn't get the ball more last year at Georgia. They've opined that there was some sort of tacit agreement with the coaching staff that he would just get enough to, to get his legs under him literally, but not, endanger his health for the NFL. I've never confirmed that. I don't know whether that's true.
Now Seth, real quick.
Real quick
for the people out there, he had two ACLs in consecutive years, right? Is that correct?
He had an ACL in 2013 after Todd Gurley had gone down.
Okay.
Totally ruined his season, obviously, and his track, he was on track to have a really big year. When he came back, he had more kind of knee troubles. The knee just wasn't there. I don't think it was really an MCL or anything. It just wasn't there. And he just was never quite himself. But he's obviously better health-wise. The question is his vision, standing up and staying straight to the hole, that kind of thing.
Okay. Good stuff.
Got it. Very interesting. And he could be a guy in day three that teams think have a pretty high ceiling. Anybody, Seth, and this is how I kind of like to close all these interviews, anybody we miss that you think is coming out of Georgia that could be a day three pick here that might surprise some folks?
Yeah, I mentioned earlier when we were talking about the inside linebackers and why Floyd did not play inside linebacker, the guy that emerged was a guy named Jake Gainis, who, and yes, it is pronounced that way, who transferred from UAB. Remember, UAB shut down as a program temporarily. And so Georgia signed who had been UAB's leading tackler the last 2 years, Jake Gainis. And a lot of people said, well, I don't know if he can come complete at this level in the SEC. Well, he came in and he led the team in tackles and was named Georgia's team MVP in a vote by the coaches.
Wow.
He was not, surprisingly to me, given an invite to the combine. I thought he deserved one, while a bunch of Georgia defensive linemen who were, just nice but not really outstanding got invites. I think that Jake Gainis in the right system could be a starter in the NFL. He's got size, not great speed, but he makes up for that in smarts, kind of a little bit like Jordan Jenkins. And they do have a nose tackle named Chris Mays, who never quite was a, great star at Georgia, but was a consistent starter the last couple years, and he's a guy that you can put on the line in either 3-4 or 4-3, and I think he could play some good downs for you at Georgia.
How about Malcolm Mitchell? He ran a 4.45 at the combine.
Yeah, I didn't want to go on too long, but Malcolm Mitchell just occurred to me too. He's a guy a little bit like Keith Marshall, or a little bit like some other guys. He would have been gone to the NFL 2 years ago if he hadn't torn his ACL, believe it or not, celebrating a touchdown in the end zone with Todd Gurley.
Oh, boy.
Game of the 2013 season, Todd Gurley scores an 85-yard touchdown, I think it was. Malcolm Mitchell goes to celebrate, tears his ACL. And then he was slow to return in 2014 because of some knee injuries. That's he was bad. Healthy last year, and he was great. Now, is he a number one receiver in the NFL? Probably not. But is he a guy that can start? The Kansas City Chiefs have gotten some good use out of a guy named Chris Conley, who I believe was a third-round pick, and Mitchell was better than Conley. So Mitchell's only like 6 foot, 6'1", but he's another character guy, a kid that I don't know how much people up in New York care about this, but kid from rural Valdosta, Georgia, who admits that he came into University of Georgia reading on about a seventh-grade level. By the time he left, he had literally written a children's book and become a huge advocate for reading. He very famously joined a women's book club where you have like, you know, 20 old white Southern women and then Malcolm Mitchell. You
know, that's awesome.
South Georgia. he's a great story. He's one of those. He's another one of those guys that we as media members and Georgia fan base are really going to be watching in the NFL and rooting hard for him. But he's also going to be somebody that even if he doesn't have a long NFL career, is just going to be just fine.
Seth, awesome stuff. We appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you real soon. And good luck with the new staff down there in Georgia.
Thank you, Seth.
All right, thanks a lot.
Seth Emerson, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, fantastic job. Good stuff out of him. That Malcolm Mitchell story is great.
Oh, my goodness.
That's fantastic. Good for him.
Yeah, he gave us a couple of things there that certainly, you know, you don't see by looking at cut-ups.
No, you don't. And that's why you like to have the beat guys on, because they will give you some of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, John, in listening to him, it's clear that the Bulldogs, regardless of what their one loss record was and the coaching staff and everything else that's happened there, it's clear that they got a lot of guys who seem to be good guys.
Well, remember, Georgia, too, and pardon for interrupting, but they were predicted before this year to be, couple years, to be one of the top teams in college football. There's a reason. They got a lot of really talented guys. They just didn't come together, and big surprise, that's why the coach isn't there anymore.
Right.
Because when the boosters see, oh, we got all these big-time four-star recruits, we don't win any games. But here's another reason why. What's the common thread with a lot of these guys? Injuries.
Yeah.
They have some injury problems, too, it looks like.
Yeah. The ACL popped up a few times in that conversation.
And it's funny, he mentioned that 2013 celebration. That was a story that I heard. That was the freshman year, I believe, for both Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall, right? So they both go – Keith Marshall, from what I understand, decided to go to the school first. He committed first.
Right.
Todd Gurley got mad because he thought he should have been the top running back. He said, you know, I'm going to go to Georgia. I'm going to beat out Keith Marshall. So the first play from scrimmage, Todd Gurley runs 85 yards for a touchdown. I bet you that's the play where Malcolm Mitchell tore his ACL.
Wow.
Next kickoff, Keith Marshall returns it 97 yards for a touchdown.
Oh, no.
I swear to God. And that's how those two guys started their career in Georgia back in 2013.
That's good stuff. Wow.
So I'm curious. And Keith Marshall, I think, interesting because he's the one that blew away all the other running backs in terms of 40 times at the combine. I think he ran like a 4.38. If I'm not mistaken, let me see what he ran at the combine. I know it was a sub 4.4. He ran a 4.31 at the combine.
That's
so
really good.
His knee, at least going straight ahead, it's not that bad. He's running a 4.31 at the combine. That's not too bad. And by the way, for a running back, he benched 225 25 times. That's pretty darn good
for
a running back.
I love when you said that. His knee at least going straight ahead.
Well, the problem with the knee is when you try to go side to side, that's when the problem is. They said to go pop.
And something about those guys in front of you that don't let you go straight ahead.
That too. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We have some open lines, folks. If you want to get in, now's the time. We got 30 minutes of Giants talk with you. Let's go to Solomon in Washington, D.C. He's been holding the longest. Solomon, what's going on, pal?
Hey, I just wanted to talk real quick about Leonard Floyd.
Yeah, take your time, man. What do you got?
Yeah, a lot of people have been thinking that he couldn't fit in with us because a lot of people were seeing him as a defensive end. But remember when Anthony Barr was coming out a couple of years ago and how he went to Minnesota?
Yeah.
Yeah, now Anthony Barr was supposed to be like a dynamic pass rusher coming out, and now he plays weak side for the Vikings on first and second, and he rushes on third. And I think Floyd can do that for us.
And you know what? That's similar to how the Broncos used Von Miller when they went to the 4-3 as well. They used him as a stand-up linebacker early in downs, and they had him rush the passer on third down. Yeah, it's possible. Solomon, no question about it. If you have a good enough player and a good enough athlete, they can make that adjustment. But the question is, can they make the adjustment? So I still think that's a question we don't quite know the answer to until he gets here and tries to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, all three of them are freak athletes, though. Just imagine trying to get, like, a pass to the outside over a 6'6 linebacker.
No, you're right. And look, he has all the physical ability. No question about it. But if his here's my thing for you, Solomon. If his best skill in college was rushing the passer, and you're not going to let him do that on, let's say, be generous, half of the downs he's in the game, maybe more,
right,
is that a guy you want to spend the 10th overall pick on?
That's a good question.
And look, I'm not telling you he's a bad player, and you're right. He could be Anthony Barr, which means at 10, he's a heck of a player to pick. No doubt about it. But there are a lot of question marks that I don't think we can, with all these interviews, all this study, and all this stuff, we're not going to know the answer to these questions until he puts on the pads and puts on a helmet week one against whoever the Giants are playing, and we're going to see if he can do it.
Well, if they take him.
If they take him, right, of course.
I mean, you know, I think the toughest part for any of us, and look, I know guys who've been doing this for decades who will say the same thing. It's easy when the guy displays all of his best skills and he's coming from a program that does a lot of the same things that you do. That's easy. You could say, all right, he's going to be really good, and we can add 5 pounds to him. We can give him a little more power. He can do that for us, no problem. The real issue comes in when you have to project. Yeah. And you have to say, okay, well, he's got those skills, so we think he can do this, but we don't know for sure.
And until you get him in your classroom and get him on your practice field, Solomon, you just don't know. And
it's too late then.
If I, you can't put it back.
Yeah, I just thought he was one of those players that had, like, the highest ceiling. So
no,
he's one of the players on my board.
No, hey, absolutely. And Solomon, thanks for the call. And look, you bring up the perfect counter argument as to why he should be in the mix. Because look, as people say, he might be the best athlete in the draft. He's that freakish. So a guy like that, you could say, well, he's so athletic, he can do anything. It doesn't always translate that way. You got great athletes that can't do anything.
Just don't know.
No.
Just don't know. Heck, if you want to talk about athletes, talk about Beckham's cousin.
And, of course, the Giants have a bunch of scouts and general managers and vice presidents of player evaluation that get paid to make these decisions.
Yes.
And frankly, if they believe that he can do it, by all means, make the pick. But based on us and the work that we do, you know, there's no way for us to make that determination. At least I'm not comfortable making that determination with any sort of certainty. I don't know enough. I don't know enough about football. I'm not an expert. So the way I try to evaluate these guys is you look at what they've done. How does that translate to the Giants? I think he fits. I think he doesn't. I think that's a good fit. Ceiling, all upside, that sort of thing, that's great. But what I'm trying to predict, if a guy that played 3-4 outside linebacker in college, how he's going to fit in a 4-3, quite frankly, and I don't want to, you know, sound like I'm putting myself down, but that's frankly beyond my skill set. I can't figure that stuff out.
There are too many projections that cost too many people too many sleepless nights, and in some cases cost many people their jobs too. That's not something that I'm interested in getting involved in.
201-939-4513. Some new names on the call list. This is what I like to see. How about Sam in Washington, D.C.? He's on Giants.com next. What's up, Sam?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Doing great, Sam. How are you?
Doing great. You know, I think why guys like Floyd are so intriguing is because it's kind of a pass-happy league currently. So if you could either cover or you have some sort of rushing ability to get to the quarterback, I think you're a pretty intriguing prospect.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I mean, it's a league that right now is so concerned with the pass that if you show speed and athleticism, boy, those are magic words to scouts' ears. They just love to hear those two words. Oh, he's an athlete, and he's quick. He's got speed.
No, look, he's right. Linebackers that can rush the passer and cover are not common, and that's why he is going to be a first-round pick, Sam. You're right about that.
Correct. And, you know, I know, Paul, where you will probably go in from this perspective, but, you know, looking at the safety position, boy, it looks like there's a disparity on guys that can play the run and cover currently, and every team is kind of going after those guys. But, you know, I mean, we won a Super Bowl with okay safeties, and we won a Super Bowl, I think, in 11. You can make an argument that Phillips and Roll were probably one of the best duos that we've had back there.
They were really good.
Exactly, and we haven't had a duo like that in quite some time. But what's interesting to me is in 07, we won the Super Bowl. We had guys that got the job done, but we had a great front four. So kind of my question is if you're a team like the Giants, where you're having issues in both areas, and I think Reese has kind of answered this in this offseason, at least from a free agent perspective, where do you guys think really the sign – the true problem is, and the symptom is, I guess some folks say the symptom is you can't get to the quarterback, so your safeties suffer. Other folks say, well, you don't have enough talent back there, so you know you get blown off the top every now and then. What do you guys think? I mean, what's number one and what's number two in, from your perspective? And I'll take your answer off air.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, Sam. Go ahead, Paul.
For me, I'd prefer to have the stout pass rush up front and then worry about the secondary later. We've seen the Giants use both philosophies.
Yep.
And for me, I'd still rather have the pressure up front. I think that I don't want to say you can get away with more, but I think if you've got heat, all right, it allows you a little bit more room back there where you don't have to have necessarily all universe guys. You can have pedestrian guys in the secondary who can actually be regarded as better because of the heat. I've seen it go the other way, and it doesn't work as well because you can still only cover for 3, maybe 3.5 seconds, and then no matter how good you are, if you've got pedestrian guys rushing the quarterback,
once that quarterback breaks the
pocket,
you're
going to get beat.
You're finished.
You're going to get beat.
You're finished. I agree. So, I think Paul's 100% right.
That's where I'm going.
No, I'm with you. I think it's more important to get the pass rush, no doubt about it. That being said, you do need guys back there that are going to be able to cover for 3 and 3.5 seconds. I mean, you can't have guys that, you know, frankly, run around there like chickens with their heads cut off or safeties. And especially now, it's so important, especially if you don't have a, you know, a dynamic linebacker like, say, a Luke Kuechly or something like that. You need one of your safeties to be able to cover that tight end. And if your safety can't cover that tight end, you're in a load of trouble. Load of trouble.
The one way to combat that is if your strong side backer is very tough on that tight end at the line of scrimmage. If you don't give him a good release, that can prevent a lot of stuff. And unfortunately, the way the Giants were built the last couple of years, they weren't getting a lot of chucks on those tight ends from the get-go. And those tight ends were getting free and getting out into the second level and then into the third level. And it's like, uh-oh, they're just eating up yardage. If you had a Carl Banks type, okay, who beat the living stuffing out of tight ends, he made a living doing that. He ate them for lunch like chunky soup. If you had a guy like that, okay, then you could somewhat get away with a little bit of a slower safety.
Why'd you go with chunky soup?
I don't know. Because it's thick and there's a lot of stuff in it, and you can eat it with a fork.
And it's also harder to do that now with the rules. You know, chucking these guys and people line the tight ends out
it
wider now.
It is
so
harder.
So it's easier to release. They line them up. They flex them out off the line of scrimmage.
They
so
do.
It's harder and things like that. But, yeah, that does help. But, look, in this league, and I think that's why, you know, you look at Eric Weddle, a guy that's coming off a down year and he's over 30 years old. He's still got the money he did. Do you know why? There aren't that many safeties in the league now that can cover.
I know.
Because in college, these safeties against that read option and the spread, you want to come up and you want to tackle, and they almost play that quasi-linebacker position with the spread. But in the NFL, you need a guy to play that deep center field.
Well, put it this way. If you've got two relatively slow, I don't want to use the word slow. Let me put it this way. If you don't have a cover safety, you better have a linebacker who can do something up front.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
If you don't have that, then you better have a speed safety who can stick with one of those tight ends. If you don't have any of them,
your goose is cooked.
You give up a lot of yards.
201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the fantasy sports destination. If you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Marquise is in New Jersey. Marquise, what's going on?
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, Marquise? How are you?
Hello?
Yeah, we're with you.
How y'all doing?
Doing great.
Great.
Where
how you doing?
Am I?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear, Marquise. Go ahead.
Hello?
Marquise, hello.
Yeah, I'm just...
Marquise, go ahead. All right, look like you lost. Marquise, call us back. We can hear you just fine. Maybe you were listening to the computer and you heard an echo and that's why you were confused. If you
or
call back,
bad cell connection.
Listen, or it could be that too. Listen to the phone and we'll get you right on. Greg in Virginia. He's up next. Greg, what's happening, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing great, Greg. How are you?
Good. I want to get y'all's opinion on two positions in the draft and four specific players.
Okay, bring it.
I was really curious to get who your favorite is between Stanley and Conklin. And then I wanted to discuss Dodd and Lawson after that. But I just was curious, Pedoff especially, who you prefer out of those two offensive tackles.
Well, early on, I was a Stanley guy more than Conklin. But the more that I have looked at Conklin and the more that I have spoken to people who have seen him on a regular basis, I'm starting to switch that just a little bit. And quite honestly, that's the way it's been coming up on the boards. If you notice that, John,
Conklin's been rising real quick.
And
Greg, let me say this. I think if you're looking for a long-term left tackle, I think Ronnie Stanley is probably the guy you'll pick first. I think he's a little bit of a better athlete. He's got longer arms.
I agree with that.
He's got better feet. But I think the same criticism some people had of Will Beatty when he was here is the same criticism some people had of Ronnie Stanley, in that he's not overly physical. He's not a guy that's going to road grade you. Now,
terrific technician, though.
Absolutely. But a guy like Conklin, I think he gives you the best of both worlds. I think he's a guy that has power. His technique has to get better. He's a little inconsistent from time to time. But he doesn't have the upside of the feet and the quickness. Somebody had called Stanley a dancing bear the other day. I think that was the guest you had on Monday. That's how they referred to Ronnie Stanley as. Or maybe that was Dane Brugler yesterday. He called him a dancing bear. Conklin, for the Giants, I honestly think he might be a better prospect than Stanley if they believe Eric Flowers is their long-term left tackle. Because you put Conklin at right tackle, I think he's a power guy. He's stronger. He eats some people up at right tackle. And really, it could be a powerful run blocker in that spot. So, honestly, I'm still doing my evaluation. I watched one full game of Stanley. That's when he faced Shaq Lawson when they faced Clemson last year. And quite frankly, Stanley handled him pretty well. Lawson did not beat him off the edge once in that game. He beat him on a couple inside spin moves, which were really impressive. But he did not let him beat him off the edge. So, again, Stanley, upside left tackle. I think Conklin, as your right tackle of the future, I think might be a better player.
I got a guy who scouted Conklin thoroughly, and I talked to him, as a matter of fact, yesterday. And as I'm starting to flop a little bit, and I'm starting to move Conklin a little bit ahead of Stanley, just a little maybe. I wasn't that way for the last several months. But here was what I said to him. I said, here's my biggest issue with Conklin. Because his feet aren't great, he's very good in the box where he is, in his box.
In his phone booth.
Fine.
Right.
Real good in his phone booth. Great base, great anchor, mauler, physical. Love all these things about him. But here's the issue for me. He doesn't get out real well, and he doesn't block downfield real well. When you got to deal with the second level,
interesting.
His feet and his athleticism aren't quite there. And I don't see a lot of him getting out and leading guys, turning a 4-yard run into a 12-yard run.
What you want out of a run block. All right.
Greg,
what's your question on Dodd and Lawson?
I agree with you guys on that. He just seems like a giant to me, Conklin, that is.
Well, I guess what I should tell you is what I should tell you is the scout told me I think he might be able to do that better than you've seen.
Okay.
For what
yeah,
it's worth.
All right, what do you have on Dodd and Lawson, Greg?
I prefer Conklin myself. He did have a quote, I think it was at the Senior Bowl or some sort of event where there was NFL talent evaluators. And he said that players find out what he's about when they're picking themselves off the ground. I really like that.
That's a good quote.
Ballers mentality and giant guy. So I like that. But moving on, Kevin Dodd, I feel like, would be a better pick than Shaq Lawson between the two. But I hate that he's 24. The guy that came on that the Clemson reporter that you guys had on a few days ago said that he's better at getting to the edge and he has a better, more ideal giant size frame. Oh, athletic frame, I should say. And he was better against the run. So all that sounds great. But 24 is old for a rookie, you know.
Greg, you know what?
Lawson, I'm just like, eh.
Well, and Greg, you know, on top of that, he's not just 24, he's also raw. He only played for 1 year at Clemson. So you get a 24-year-old that you now have to develop. So you're right. I think that is a factor.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just working through it all. And, you know, if Dodd was 22 or 21, you know, I think he would be a real legitimate shot to be picked, but I feel like if you take Lawson at 10, it's way too high. And that's really all I got. I just wanted to get your opinion on the offensive lineman, and then just something I was thinking about with the DMs.
No, absolutely, Greg. Look, I think honestly.
Yeah, have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, man. I think honestly, based on where I've seen them go in the mock drafts, I think Dodd and Lawson are much closer than what I've seen in terms of their spreads of picks. I agree with what the Clemson guy said the other day. From what I've seen, I think Dodd has a faster uptick off the line of scrimmage. I think he gets to the edge better than Lawson does. I was surprised when the Clemson reporter thought Dodd was better against the run because I did not see that in what
I
watched on tape.
Yeah. I think Dodd is a little bit more all around.
Interesting. Again, I only watched the one game, and that was in, I believe Clemson Notre Dame was earlier in the year, and Dodd got better as he went along. So I'm curious to see Dodd, and it was also bad weather in the rain. So I want to see him. I'm going to watch their championship game against Alabama and see that game. He played unbelievably, and I want to see how he looked there in ideal conditions. But honestly, I see the argument for why you would pick Dodd ahead of Shaq Lawson just because of the potential and because of his overall ability to rush the passer. Because honestly, Paul, what I saw Shaq Lawson, he's not like, you know, like JPP against the Jets last year, just got off the line of scrimmage,
right,
whoop around the edge. Lawson's not that guy.
No, he's not. He's not. Lawson to me may make a few more impact plays in a game than Dodd will, but play in and play out, Dodd is probably going to be a steadier player.
And there were plays where I saw the play go away from Lawson, where he saw the play go away from him, and he's like, all right, I'm going to hang out over here.
I've seen that, too. I've seen that, too. The motor was not always in high gear.
Correct.
I've seen that. I know. Look, that's going to be one of those things where do you want the line drive doubles hitter or do you want the guy who might be able to, you know, hit a few more home runs?
See, but I think physical upside, I think Dodd might be better than Lawson.
I don't know, because at 24, how much more is his body going to change?
Right, but with experience, can he turn that better athleticism into more production?
Projection again. I don't know.
Right.
Projection. I hate that.
Right.
Projection.
It's funny. It's a real dichotomy with him. Is you want to say he's only played a year, so he's a lot of room to grow. But wait, he's 24. Lawson, you say, you know what? I think he's peaked athletically. I don't know how much better he can get.
I don't know.
But he's younger. So that's why I know, you know, people think Lawson's around 15. I see Dodd go into the first round. I even see him dip into the second round of some of these drafts, which I don't get. I think they're a lot closer than a lot of other people have made it out to be.
I think both of them are going to be in the first round.
I agree. I think both will probably be before 20. Maybe before 25.
Before 25,
before 25
for sure,
let's say.
I would think.
201-939-4513. Harrison is in Florida. He's up next. Harrison, what's up, pal?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. Hi. Harry, how are you?
I had a question about what you guys thought on Robert Kembice.
Boy, talk about a guy that you're taking the dice, put him on the table, closing your eyes and hoping for the best. Because, I mean, he is like the body perfect, you know, 300 pounds, 6 foot plus defensive tackle. He looks like he should be J.J. Watt. The problem is that he plays like he's not J.J. Watt and not even close, which is the problem.
And also, they rolled the dice on a guy like DeMontre Moore, and it didn't work out.
Wait a second now. If there's one thing that you should have picked up when you listen to John Mara and Jerry Reese at their pressers a couple of months ago, is that they are much less inclined to be in the risk-taking business. I mean, they made that very clear. You know, the Giants know.
John Mara especially made that very clear.
They know that in those middle rounds, once you get to 3, 4, 5, they've got to do a whole lot better. And therefore, you need to be, I hate to use sure thing because there's no such thing in the draft, but you need to be a little more confident in a guy than you know, rolling dice.
You want to pick guys with higher floors.
Yes.
How does that sound?
That's a good word. That's a good phrase. I like that.
What about, like, with the guy, he has unstoppable talent, but they took a risk on DeMontre Moore, and it didn't work out.
Past. That's the past. That's done. That's buried. That's finished. The Giants today, 2016, they understand that the situation today calls for them to take fewer risks. Case closed. Noah Spence, look, you may be a decent fella. I don't know you real well, but I don't think you're coming to the Giants.
And not in round two, which is where they would have to pick him.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Harrison. And I think you would put Robert Kembice into a similar category. Different issues. Doesn't have that off the field stuff. Completely different player. But in terms of we don't know what we're getting, he's right in that group.
You know, not to steal a nickname from a famous comedian, but if you're a dice man, I don't want you.
And another guy I'll throw into that group of player I actually really like, and it's a shame he got hurt because I think he would be probably a top 20 pick, the Carl Joseph safety. Out of West Virginia, who, boy, he can play, dude. Oh, man, can he play. Well, but he's coming off an ACL.
Jalen Smith.
Right.
Another dice man.
Yeah, you know, do you think he can ever sneak into the first round of this draft?
Well, on the 14th, he gets that physical exam.
Let's have this conversation again in a week. I don't think having it now is fair.
Can't do it today.
I agree. I agree with you. That's fair. Everybody else can, but it's a waste of time. 201-939-4513. Steve is down in Atlanta. He's up next. Steve, what's happening?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
I love the show, and I'm a New Yorker stuck down here in Georgia. So it's great that you have, like, these guys from Georgia. And my son went to University of Mississippi, Ole Miss. So, and I follow them, and it's funny what the caller just said about Robert Condici. I mean, he does have some off-the-field issues, but this is a guy that he was – I mean, yesterday, John, you were talking about, like, five guys, like, that are difference makers. That guy could be a difference maker. A lot of risk on and off the field, but I'm telling you, at 300 pounds, he's like – you know what? I think of him like JPP of the defensive tackles. I mean, the guy – could be a real difference maker, you know. And if he, and it, you know, it depends what he said, you know, how you think committed he is to,
right,
to being the best. But the guy has 300 pounds, can run. What do you run? 4.6 or 4.8, something like that.
It was a ridiculous number. And look, he again, if you watch him, here's the thing: if you took Kimdichi's tape and you threw it away, and you judge him as a prospect based on what he did at the combine and his pro day, he'd be a top five pick.
Yeah,
no, it doesn't work that way.
Can't do it.
Yeah, I'm thinking later round. I mean,
right.
Second. I don't know. I mean, it's a risk.
I
wanted to call about was these injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my question is for Paul. I mean, what position do you think has the highest chance of injury in the NFL?
Whew, that's a good question.
I think it's running back.
Okay, running back. What would you say the second is?
After running back.
I mean, you probably think of somebody in the trenches, you think? Defensive line, maybe?
No.
Corner? Hamstring? For the Giants, it's certainly been cornerback.
Yeah.
If you want to go by the Giants, it's been corner.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking linebacker. I mean, and here's the thing. Running back, and if I was building a team, I would look at maybe more quantity than quality. Obviously, you like both. But running back, see, I wouldn't take – I would have Elliott off my board. I just running. When you look at, I mean, I have like 5, 6, 7 good reasons why the Giants shouldn't take him.
I agree with you. By the way, I would not touch Elliott at number 10. I would not do it.
When I see Elliott and even Floyd, I worry about that. I mean, it just doesn't seem to fit. And at 10, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go there.
Well, it's a philosophical thing. It has nothing to do with the player. It's a philosophical thing. And I will say this to you too. If you go into the draft thinking about injuries first and, oh, is this guy going to get hurt or what position does he play because that's more susceptible to injury, then you're just defeating your entire purpose of going into the draft to get the best players.
Right.
You can't do that. The only way injury can become a component in drafting a player is if he's got a predisposed injury coming out of school. Now you have to grade that injury in terms of what it's going to do to his productive abilities when you take him. That's the only way you can think about injuries.
Right. I hear you. Okay. Like, so linebacker, right? I'm looking at Jack, right? I would take him, you know, if he's there at 10, I'm taking him, right?
You run to the podium and you run out of the building before the cops catch you.
Yeah, but I'm going to beat you to the podium first.
The silver lining in this, though, is you see these linebackers. And yesterday I read a guy retires after 1 year on Buffalo. He's a linebacker. Then you go and you look at these linebackers on San Francisco, and they're retiring after 1, 2 years. One guy retired after a year or two. The other guy retired. You know, I mean, and when
Alex
you think
Boone
about
came
it,
back,
you have these running backs lining 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. You have these linebackers,
Anthony
4 yards
Davis.
Off the line of scrimmage, and they're running as fast as they can in a meeting. I mean, you're talking concussion, you know, like the guy on Dallas Lee. I agree. With Jack, I take him because he's such an exception. But if I'm building a team, I mean, I think I take volume, quantity over quality when it comes to running backs, linebackers. And you see all the linebacker injuries we've had over the last year. I mean, you need 3 middle linebackers. And I don't know. I just for that reason,
that's a fair point.
I'm not taking Elliott. Or for not and other reasons. I mean, I think – I think you got the New England Patriots, you know, philosophy of taking, you know, all these the running back of the week, you know. I mean, they just go for these free agents. I think that's a pretty good strategy there, and linebacker as well. But if you get a stud like Jack, you just can't pass up.
And honestly, yes, you have to have a philosophy in general about certain things, but there are always going to be exceptions. Look, if I told you tomorrow that we could redo the draft and the Giants could get Luke Kuechly, let's say, with their first-round pick the year he came out, you would take it.
Obviously,
you know,
yes.
You know what I'm saying?
So, yes.
I mean, you know, or Von Miller.
Or Patrick Willis
him,
or
right?
Navarro Bowman, whatever.
So don't just blanket it and say, I can't take a linebacker in the first round. Right. I mean, that's why you're even saying now you would take Jack, and so would I.
Now,
quite frankly, if Jalen Smith was healthy, I would take Jalen Smith over Jack.
Now, you are saying that about running back, though.
I am saying that about running back because, in my mind, I think the game has changed enough.
I think that's fair. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just asking you.
I think the game has changed enough where, you know, that one, quote, game-breaking running back isn't having as much impact on the game as he did some years ago.
You know, it's a real shame. You mentioned Jalen Smith. And, by the way, Steve, thanks for the call. And, by the way, don't take this negatively, but I feel like I'm talking to Bernie Sanders on the phone with your voice. You sound just like him. Thanks for the call, pal. I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, you guys have a good weekend.
You
appreciate
too.
It.
Doesn't he sound like Bernie Sanders?
He did a little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Bernie Sanders from Brooklyn, it makes sense.
Okay, go ahead.
How much would it have helped the Giants if Jalen Smith didn't tear up his knee?
Oh.
They'd be a real shot at Miles Jack at 10 if Jalen Smith was on this board.
Look.
They'd be a real shot. Or Buckner, if you like him on the defensive line. You could get – there's a real good chance at one – or Hargraves, if one of those three guys – really good chance of getting one of those three if Jalen Smith was still a top five pick.
You know what's wild, John? And we've talked about this off the air, talked about it the other day with Anita, we talked about it with Lance. In the last 2 weeks, there have become a number of mock drafts, Bleacher Report, Pro Football Focus. There was one on Sirius the other day.
And someone just came out the other day that had it too.
And people
CBS,
are saying
I
that
think.
Miles Jack could be at 9 or 10. They're telling me that this is not out of the question.
See, I think this is people trying being – here's what I think it is. These are people that are being forced by their editors, someone like you, to create – you're an editor. Right?
But I would never force anybody to do something like that.
It's a joke.
Go
ahead. They force these people to do mock drafts every week.
Right.
So when you do a mock draft every week, what do you have to do?
You got to try to come up with something new.
You have to try to come up with something new.
Okay.
That's my feel for it. Because to me, I see no justification for him to be there.
He's a top five. He's a top five player.
If you take the quarterbacks out, it's Tunzel, Ramsey, Bosa, Miles Jack. And then Buckner.
Now
that was your top five. It's easy.
But I am going to give you. I am going to give you something that I was told yesterday by a longtime NFL guy who said to me, "You know what? The Michigan State quarterback is better than the other two guys, and a lot of people are missing it."
Well, you know, John Gruden called him the best quarterback in the draft yesterday,
and
I don't buy that.
Apparently, Parcells said it too.
Well, that's because he comes from a pro system, and I think that's why people get excited about it. But I've watched – look, I have a couple of Michigan State games, and I'm going to watch Conklin next week. And when I watch Conklin, I'll keep an eye on Connor Cook, too, because I'm watching the Michigan State offense. I don't
– But if somebody out there thinks so, and three quarterbacks go in the top nine
– that ain't happening.
I don't
think – anything, Paxton Lynch is going to go in the top 10, not Cook.
I don't think so either. But there are some people who are saying to me that they think Cook is the best quarterback prospect in this draft. And if you think he is and you need a quarterback, then you got to take him.
Well, I think there's a chance that there's no quarterbacks in the first 10 picks.
Wow.
And there might be a mock draft that we shoot next week that'll illustrate that.
Don't you give it to me.
I wonder who is going to get that one.
No.
I already have it done. Do you want me to give you a sneak preview?
No.
It's not good. You're not going to like it.
First of all, I don't want to see your preview. Second of all, you better have at least a quarterback taken in the top 10.
Nope. I have one draft with two in the top 10. I have one draft with one in the top 10. And then I have one draft with no quarterbacks in the top 10. Guess who's getting that one?
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. All right.
I had to make it tough on you.
I'll deal with it.
Paul, here's the thing. You should take it as a compliment. I have so much faith in your preparation and research that you're the guy I always throw the wrench to.
You do. It's okay.
I don't want to make it easy on you.
It's okay.
Easy's not fun.
We do have fun with it, and it's a cool thing to go through and a great exercise to enter. And one of the reasons why is because you truly don't know what's going to happen.
No.
And
that's
it's better to be prepared than not be.
It's all guesswork and speculation.
Yes, it is.
And you know what, though? In all seriousness, this is what front offices do, though, too. And we have one more call. I'll get to you, Mark. I know we're past 1 o'clock. I'll get you on. Don't worry. Stick on the line. We'll get to you in a second. Front offices, if the Giants are picking 10, for example, they're not going to just rank their top 9 players and hope one of their top 9 falls to them.
No.
No. They're going to have 10. So I'm going to make you decide who your 10th favorite player
okay.
is.
Okay. Fine.
All right?
Done.
Mark in Long Beach. He's up next. Mark, what's going on?
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Pleasure to listen to you guys.
Appreciate it.
I just wanted to retract with the safety position that you guys were talking about in the past.
Yes, sir.
I have a prospect. I heard John spoke about him before. T.J. Green from Clemson.
Okay.
I mean, he's got all the physical ability. I haven't looked at very detailed tape on him.
T.J. Green is a real fast guy. He's 6'2", Paul. He ran a 4.34 40-yard dash. He's got all the physical tools, but here's the thing. If you have all those physical tools, Mark, and you're still projected to go in the fourth or fifth round, that means you have some issues with your game tape.
Yeah. This is there. All right. Thank you, guys.
I appreciate it. I can give you a couple quick things on T.J. Greener. This is from Dane Brugler's draft guide.
Go right ahead.
One-year starter at free safety. Wanted to play wide receiver in college, but he was, quote-unquote, not that good on offense, according to his roommate and safety teammate, J-Rod Kearse, who helped convince Green to move the defense prior to 2014.
That's nice.
So he played safety for 2 years. That's funny. Played man over the slot receiver. Intriguing size, speed. Lacks quick twitch. Goes with the flow. Needs to be more under control. Not a drive tackler. Doesn't play with much anticipation, reacting to the play after it, not before it. Although he doesn't make a lot of mistakes and has NFL speed, he doesn't make many plays either and is still very young in defensive back years, skilled on special teams, which should keep him employed in the NFL, but he needs a lot of work before ready for starter snaps on defense.
All right. The best way I can describe this is I'll do film work on between 100 and 125 players.
He's not one of them.
He was not one of the guys on my list to do film work on.
How do you get that list?
I talk to some people. I look at some projections, and then I kind of say, okay, these are the guys I want to do. And I kind of make it's a sketched out list. It's a running list that changes over the course of time.
Do you watch like kind of one game from each guy? What do you usually do?
Sometimes I'll watch a whole half. Sometimes I'll just get as many clips as I can. Sometimes I get people send me stuff.
Okay.
But it's between 100 and 125 guys that I'll watch. And those are guys who I feel good talking about because I've seen them with my eyes. I don't always just want to go by what the paperwork says. I want to go by what I want to see.
And then sometimes on a Saturday, or me and you doing a live show on Big Blue Kickoff Live, the Giants draft Michael Thompson.
Yeah. I was.
If you guys want to go back to the archives, it's really one of the funnier moments in big BBK history. Paul and I are sitting in the draft, Giants drafted Michael Thompson. We basically looked at each other and went, he's from Texas.
Yeah.
He played safety.
He could have played on Mars at that point because that's as much game tape and information as I had on him.
And I was the same. So yeah. It was just a guy that we weren't that familiar with. But from what we saw in the spring and summer last year, I hope he can get back from that Achilles and be a good productive player this year. And
all right.
Never say we're not willing to laugh at ourselves. For Paul DiTino, I'm John Schmalk. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday as our preparation for the draft continues on Giants.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next time.
All right, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.